Good morning. And welcome here this morning. Andrew said that I was excited. It's not excited about standing up here in front of you, just to clarify. But I am really excited about this new series that we're going to be starting off in Joshua. And I love the character of Joshua. I love the book of Joshua in lots of ways. There's some amazing stories that transport me back to some of the stories that I remember enjoying when I was a child. And the idea this morning in this part of our service is to split it into two sections. So first of all, we're going to have a look at some of the background of where we are at this time with Joshua and the book, and try to understand a little bit of that to put us in good stead for when we look over these next few weeks, as Andrew said, 10 weeks of looking into the book of Joshua. And then we're going to have a little bit of worship, and then we're going to actually look at some of the things in the first chapter, and also have an opportunity to reflect on them and just to think about where we are as we move forward into a new year. And I think the title this morning is New Beginnings, and that's how it all sort of packs together. Now, when I got this from Lorimer sends out a sheet and he tells you what you're preaching on, and this, when I saw it, I was like really excited. That's usual for me when a preaching plan comes out. But this was the first sermon I ever preached. And so I was like, yes, I'll just dig out my old sermon. So, but I did look through it and I thought it was pretty rubbish, actually. So thanks, Josh, for the laugh. But when I was at college about 22 years ago, and I was studying Christian youth work, one of the things which I didn't know when I signed up for the course was that I had to preach in front of my class. And this was the passage that I chose. And so I pulled out the sermon and I read through it. And in there as well, for you older ones, there was an acetate with my 5 points on it that I used to put on top of the overhead projector. And as I was going through it, I just I started remembering some of the feelings I had when I had to stand up there in front of the class. And my lecturer was in the corner marking me down. And I was so far out of my comfort zone. But as you look back, you think how these times where God has stretched you and moved you and moulded you, and you get them opportunities to look back and to see what God has been doing in your life. And I think that's really important when we're at this time of New Year to start thinking about some of these things. You know, where is God moving us to? And apparently, so I understand and was told recently, that if we want to live a life that is satisfied and feeling fulfilled and challenged, we should be living about 75% of it in what is called our stretch zone, and 20% in our comfort zone, and 5% in our panic zone. This is panic zone time. And it's the same with if we want to develop our fitness as well, isn't it? It's no good just keep doing the same thing because we don't really get any fitter. So we need to be pushing ourselves, rechecking what our goals are, re-evaluating where we are. And this Christmas, Vicky bought me this watch. And it measures my heart rate. And I just mentioned it. I wasn't really sort of digging for a new watch that would tell me my heart rate. But I was saying that I'd probably go out jogging, and I sort of, you know, I'll jog along, and I just jog, and it's comfy. And I come back, and Vicky goes, "Where have you been?" And I was like, "Oh, you're hardly sweating." I'm like, "Yeah." And I realised that I wasn't really pushing myself. So I needed to get my heart rate up, and she picked up on this and got me this watch. I don't know if she's trying to kill me off to try and get my heart rate up. But apparently, I think, Alex, you'll tell me perhaps if I'm right, but you want to be sort of, some of the time, you want to be working in this 150 plus. Is that about right, yeah? And I think, just hang on a second. Yeah, I'm getting up to 100 now, so... But the book of Joshua itself and the story of Joshua and the Israelites is about them being in these different zones as they are stretched in their faith and they're tested in their obedience. And so what we find in the book of Joshua is a book of God in action, a book of God starting to fulfill his promises to Abraham, and a book of new beginnings, as we've already mentioned. But who was Joshua? What shout us some things out. Who was Joshua? What do we remember about Joshua? Anybody? What? I'm a bit deaf.
Moses.
Okay, so he was the successor to Moses, yes?
Son of Nun.
Well done. So he was the son of Nun. He was actually the firstborn son of Nun. That's important later. Anybody else?
Fine.
I am really deaf.
12 were bad. No, 10 were bad and 2 were good.
He was a spy. 10 were bad, 2 were good. Anybody know what Joshua was called before he was called Joshua? Okay, so he was called Hoshea, which means he delivers, he with a small e. And Moses changed his name to Joshua, which means the Lord has delivered. And I think that's really key. And the first time we hear about Joshua is in Exodus 17. And we see him in the battle against the Amalekites. And we've got Joshua is leading the Israelites out because he's their warrior. And he takes out the Israelites. But we have this picture of Moses on the mountain praying to God. And and when Moses is praying with his arms aloft, the battle is going amazing and Joshua is winning. But Moses starts getting tired and his hands come down. And the battle starts going badly. And so Hur and Aaron, who are with him, they support his hands in prayer. And the battle is won and Joshua wins. And I think this is we start getting an inclination of actually there's something going to happen with Joshua. There's a bigger picture happening here because God says to Moses, he says, make sure that you write this down and also make sure that Joshua knows about it. He wants Joshua to know that it wasn't him down in the bottom, but the important bit was happening up on the mountainside. And to me, I see Joshua as this faithful warrior, but he's hard as nails. You know, that's the picture I have of him. He's like John Wayne, Clint Eastwood, for you younger guys, Jason Bourne or The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. And I remember him, the stories of Jericho. I remember things about him that he's always being told to be strong and courageous, as we'll look at this morning. And so just as we wrap up about thinking about the background and who Joshua is, I've got 5 S's that are hopefully going to stay with you over these next few weeks as we remember who Joshua is, what made him into the man that he became, and what is the background? So S number 1, he was a slave. So he was born a slave in Egypt. 400 years the Israelites had been slaves in Egypt. Their whole identity, their occupation, nearly all of their history could be summed up by this word, slave or slavery. And commentators think that Joshua was probably about 40 when the Israelites left Egypt. And that means that Joshua was there. He was an eyewitness to the plagues that happened. He was an eyewitness. He crossed the Red Sea on dry ground. And as we've already said, he was the firstborn son, so he could have died on the Passover night. S number 2. He was a spy, as we've already said. He was one of the 12 that was sent out early on to try and suss out the promised land, to see what was going on there. And he came back with Caleb, and they were the only ones that came back and said, yeah, the land is good, and we can take it. They came back with this report of God's goodness, and they were like, yeah, come on, let's go. But as somebody's already said, there was 10 of them who were all doom and gloom. And because of that disbelief, they ended up wandering round in circles in the wilderness for 40 years. And it was only Joshua and Caleb themselves who ended up going into the promised land of that generation. S number three, he was a servant. So Joshua, we read, is the servant of Moses in the wilderness. And he got the chance to be in the tent of meeting when God was chatting away to Moses. He ate the provision of manna and drank water from the rock. He was led by a cloud of a pillar of cloud during the day and a pillar of fire by night. S number four, he was a soldier. He was a great warrior, and we read of his battles, and he was the guy that led the Israelites around and around Jericho when the walls fell down. And also we read that number five, he was the successor to Moses. Moses had led the Israelites out of Egypt, but it was Joshua who led them into the promised land. 700 years after that initial promise to Abraham, it was happening now. It was this time. It was momentous. It was like this such important point in God's chosen people's history. And so we've got five things there for you to take away to try and remember as we're moving forward. But also I want to ask the question, what else is going on in this book that is going to relate to us and that's happening in the pages that we will come to read? Because we know that Joshua's name and we know a little bit about what it means, but also the Greek translation of that is Jesus. And a few weeks ago, Graham was talking to us about the genealogy of Jesus, and he was saying that all of the Bible is there to point to Jesus, and the book of Joshua is no different to that. This is the start of God fulfilling his promise to Abraham, but it's only in the coming of Jesus that there is fulfillment to those promises, as Jesus comes to be a blessing to everyone, a blessing to all nations. And so we have in the book of Jesus, in the book of Joshua, we have this person, this foreshadowing, this picture of Christ and his victory. And so as Joshua and the Israelites move from slavery into freedom as conquerors in the promised land and claiming their inheritance and their rest because of God, we too, in the same way, Paul tells us that we are like slaves to sin. And through Jesus' work on the cross and his victory, we can now be free and be more than conquerors. And because of God, we too can claim our rest. And we'll look at this intriguing idea of rest in a little bit more detail when we get on to chapter 1. So it is true that this book is a historical record of some pretty grim battles as the Israelites conquer the land, but there's still much to learn. And Charles Price says this about the book. He says, "If you want to know the potential of an obedient life, read Joshua. If you want to know how the power of God can be demonstrated in the weakness of man, read Joshua. If you want to know how to take hold of all that which Jesus died to make possible, read Joshua." And so as we start this new series, I hope you're starting to get a little bit excited about what lays ahead for us as we expectantly look to see what God is going to speak into our lives over these next few weeks. So, part two. And what I want to do is, as we look at these first few verses, is to look at three words that we find in the passage. The first word is now, in verse 2. The second word is be, which we find in verses 6 and 7. And the last word is so, which we find in verse 10. And we started to understand a little bit about who Joshua was and the setting for the book. And I wonder if you would stand up with me at the minute, if you can. So if you'd like to stand up. And I would wonder if you want to just join me imagining what Joshua felt like. What was it like to be in Joshua's shoes at this moment in time? So perhaps just close your eyes. You've just been given this massive charge. See if you can imagine yourself there in the wilderness, standing in Joshua's shoes. It's probably going to be pretty warm. There could be one of those strong winds blowing through the wilderness that sort of suck the breath out of you. And there in the distance is the mighty Jordan River. It's in flood. Not only have you got to cross that, and there are no bridges, but on the other side there are all these tribes and clans and nations, and some of them are living in fortified cities. They're not going to be that keen to give up their land easily. Oh yes, and you've got to take about 2 million men, women and children with you. Never mind all the sheep, the cows, the camels, perhaps some hens, but no pigs. Even worse, all these people are looking at you expectantly. Because the old leader, the great prophet Moses, who knew God face to face, was dead. He wasn't there anymore to lead you. It's down to you. Oh yes, and there is one more important thing. This is one of the most important moments of your people's history. Something that has been looked forward to for hundreds of years. So no pressure. Are you in the zone? What was he feeling like? Well, I can definitely see how God would be saying to him, be strong and be courageous. If you want to grab a seat, and let's look at that first word of now, verses 1 to 5. And we see that the scene and the task is being set. Now, Moses, the great leader, is dead. This is it, Joshua. Time to stand up, to step out. This is your moment. And we get this live situation report of God speaking to Joshua in these verses. And God is already one step ahead of Joshua, because within these first few verses we see some potential obstacles, some potential questions that Joshua is probably going to have. And God has already got these three unequivocal solutions, these answers already in the pipeline. The old leader is dead. Will the people be with me? More importantly, will God be with me? Am I really worthy enough to take over from Moses? God's solution, verse 5, I will be with you just as I was with Moses. So that same divine power that's been working and walking with Moses, being alongside Moses, is going to be alongside Joshua. And so we get this picture that yes, the old leader is dead, God's servant is dead, but his work carries on. Okay, God, great, thanks. But this is a pretty big area. It stretches for miles. How are we going to manage to take all of this? How are we going to do it? God answers, God's solution, verses 2 and 3. This is a gift. I'm giving it to you. I'm fulfilling the promises that I gave 700 years ago. You've seen me working in the wilderness. You've seen me working in Egypt. Step forward and claim this promise. Yeah, great, but what about all these tribes that we're going to come across? They've been fighting for years. They've been learning the craft of war for years. And we've just been wandering round the wilderness, and we're just sons of slaves. Who are we? God says, verse 5, no one is going to be able to stand up to you all the days of your life. The victory is already yours. You just need to step out in faith and claim it. And so what we see in these first five verses is something that Joshua has been experiencing for 40 years. He's been learning that the accounts that we read in the book of Joshua and what we see in Moses is not about the person, but it's about God. So the accounts are of what God is doing through Joshua rather than what Joshua is doing for God. It is not about where or how really Joshua stepped out, but it's who he stepped out with. And that was the Lord God Almighty. Second key word, be. And we've tried to think and to visualise what it must have been like to be Joshua at that moment. What did Joshua need to be? And we know the answer. He needs to be strong and courageous, doesn't he? Three times in the space of three verses he's told, be strong and be courageous. And the amazing thing here is that God knew Joshua. He knew what he needed to be, and he knew what he needed to hear. And there's nothing better, is there, when you've got some big task to do, and someone comes up alongside you and encourages you and says, yeah, come on, I know you can do this. And I think that's what God is sort of doing. He knows what Joshua needs to hear, and he gets alongside and he says, come on, you can do this. But God also knows what the people, the Israelites, needed to see in their new leader. They needed someone who was going to be strong, who was going to be courageous, who was going to be decisive, because they needed encouraging in their journey as well. And we see a similar thing when we look at Moses as well and his calling at the burning bush. God knew what Moses needed to hear, and he knew what the Israelites needed to hear. Because we have this conversation and God says, I will be with you. And Moses goes, but who are you? And God says, I am. And this idea of I am is quite simply that God is sufficient. He is all that is needed. And so Joshua, he finds himself in this amazing place of seeing firsthand, through Moses, what it is like to be what God has called you to be. And that example of Moses had set, living his life in relationship with God, with talking with God, with listening to God. In fact, the Bible tells us he spoke face to face. He met face to face with God to the point where he was glowing from being in the presence of God. He knew God and he knew his will. And so God says to Joshua in verse 7, he says another be, he says be careful. And so this be careful is to be careful to keep living in relationship with God. It's essential for the journey ahead, Joshua. God calls him to obey him, to be focused on him, and to meditate on his word. To keep his relationship alive and growing through knowing God's word and talking to God, just as Moses had done. Key word number three, so. Does it say that Joshua went back to camp? Does it say so Joshua went back and had a think about it? Does it say that Joshua went back to chat with his mates and just to see whether they thought it was okay? No, it sparked activity, it sparked action. Now was the time for Joshua to stand up, to step out, to be strong and courageous in his faith and God's call on his life. And that is just what he did. He led the Israelites to claim the promise and their rest. And there's that word again, rest. But we know what's coming. There's battles, there's blood, there's sweat. And it seems a funny word, doesn't it, to be used as a term for this next bit of entering into the promised land. But what we find as we read this, and we find places in the New Testament as well, is that this is not a rest of inactivity, of settling down, of doing nothing, nor is it to do with dying and going to heaven like sometimes is portrayed. The following chapters, in fact, they record battles and sin and failures. None of that happens in heaven. This rest is about God's sufficiency to provide all that is needed to accomplish his will. Remember God telling Moses, I am. That is, I am all that you need. Well, these first 9 verses, in a sense, is God putting into words for this next part of the journey that God was sufficient. He was explaining how he was going to do it and what they needed to do. He had it under control. And all they had to do was to lean into him, to trust him and his promises, and to find rest from their personal striving, their worry, their endeavour, and to just rest into him and those promises. This rest was not about death or about doing nothing, but it was about life and life to the full. It was about being victorious. It was about being in relationship with God. It was about saying goodbye to slavery and to the old wanderings in the wilderness and entering into a rich promised inheritance. And I don't know whether you're starting to see some of the pictures that are coming through that are pointing us back to Jesus and to his promises and his victory. Because the writer to the Hebrews sees that in chapters 3 and 4 of Hebrews. He sees that this idea of rest points back to Christ. Because there is a rest for you and me that is available through Christ, that is the birthright of every child of God. It is a rest from our own striving, from our own endeavour, from our own work. And so Jesus, who came at that first Christmas, and he was called Emmanuel, which is God with us, gives us an invitation in Matthew 11, and he says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. And so what we see in Joshua in reality is Joshua just taking the Israelites into the place that they were always meant to be. And so too with Jesus, he came to restore us back to where we were meant to be. We were created to be in this amazing relationship with God. He created us. Without him, we don't function as we were intended to do. We're broken. And Christ came to put right, restoring us, if we trust in him, to that original purpose of relationship with God, of the purpose of our existence, and to make us complete. But what the Israelites found as well when they went into the promised land and they started finding their rest, was that living in a restored relationship puts us at odds with the world and with the devil. And so just as the Israelites found a battlefield when they went into their promised land, we too find ourselves sometimes, quite often, in a spiritual battlefield. But we can live lives that are victorious because of Christ's victory and claim God's promises and of completeness and of rest. And so as we wrap this up and we start to think about applying some of these things to our life, we need to remember that God is sufficient. And so as we finish, if you can, I'd like you to stand up again. Sorry, it's quite energetic today. If you feel like at any point you would like to sit down, please do. But as we're standing here in your shoes, I want us to reflect on what God is saying to us today for the year ahead. And we're going to use those three words that we've been looking at as we reflect on our life and God's call. And perhaps again you might want to close your eyes. Feel free to sit down at any point if you would like. Now, what is your situation today? This year? What now is God drawing your attention to as we stand here this morning? God is interested in every area of our lives. But where are we spiritually? Do you see yourself wandering in the wilderness or conquering in the promised land? In the wilderness, the Israelites were great at looking back, yearning for what they had. But in the promised land, they looked forward to conquering the enemy and claiming their rest and riches. Or perhaps you're here this morning and you're not sure about the whole God thing, but you know that something is missing. Perhaps you're daunted by the year ahead and another year of, well, what? What is life about? Jesus came to restore, to give life, to make us complete and whole. He is that missing piece, waiting to journey with you as he did with Joshua. So this morning, be honest. Let's just pause and ask, where am I on my journey? B. What is God calling you to be? What do you need to hear from God this morning, this year? Remember, God says simply, I am all that you need. I am sufficient. He says, come to me. Are you weary? He is rest. Are you unloved? He is love. Are you perplexed? He is wisdom. Are you feeling inadequate? He is sufficient. Are you pressured and out of sorts? He is peace. Are you guilty? He is your place of forgiveness. So, what do you need to do? Is God asking you to step out in faith? Is God asking you to make changes in your life? And perhaps as we just think about some of the things that perhaps God is speaking into our heart, perhaps these words from a prayer will help you as we pause. Lord, I do not know what to ask of you. Only you know what I need. I simply present myself to you. I open my heart to you. Show me how to pray. So Lord, we pray that now in this new year, we will be strong and courageous, active, not inactive, for you, and resting in your sufficiency. Amen.
We're going to sing now. and then we will be finished. We're going to sing "To God Be the Glory."